right, let's kick off our deep dive today, and we're going to be jumping way back to 1997 to unpack a case that I think still has huge implications for disability rights in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Van Deys in Deep View, Wisconsin.
Absolutely.
So whether you're out there advising employees or your employers on ADA compliance, this case really is just chock full of these crucial insights that I think are going to be really helpful.
Yeah, it really digs into that concept of reasonable accommodation under the ADA, which can be a bit of a gray area sometimes, you know?
Okay, so like paint the picture for us. Yes. Who is Lori Van De Zande and what was she up against?
Yeah, so Lori Van De Zande was a state employee in Wisconsin, and she used a wheelchair due to paralysis, and so she sued her employer claiming they weren't doing enough to reasonably accommodate her disability.
So I'm already curious here because, like, just from kind of reading up on this a little bit,
yeah,
it seems like her employer had actually made quite a few accommodations already. Like, what was the breaking point?
Yeah, you're right. They had done things like modifying bathrooms, providing adjustable furniture. They even gave her a cot for personal care at work. Mm-hmm. But there were two specific requests that really sparked the whole lawsuit.
Hit me.
Yeah.
Hit me with those.
Okay. So the first involved working from home.
Okay.
So Van De Zande developed pressure ulcers, which is a common issue for wheelchair users, and needed to work remotely for about 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And so she requested a desktop computer to allow her to do that full time during that time.
Okay. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, like, her employer was just like, sure, no problem.
Yeah.
Like, happily ever after, right?
Well, not quite. The employer only offered her 15 to 20 hours per week of remote work and said she'd have to use leave for the rest.
Okay. So that's where the conflict comes in.
Exactly.
So what was the second issue?
The second issue involves something that seems really small.
Okay.
A detail in a new office building. The break room sink, it was 36 inches high, which made it difficult for Van De Zande to use. So she requested they lower it by 2 inches and the employer refused.
Wow, a 2-inch sink becomes like this legal battleground? That's wild. So I'm guessing this was like a pretty clear-cut case in Van De Zande's favor then, right?
Well, that's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
The court actually sided with the employer on both counts.
Oh, wow.
And their reasoning set some pretty important precedents.
Okay, I definitely need to hear this. So let's start with the work-from-home issue. Mm-hmm. Like, what was the court's logic there?
Yeah, they really emphasize that the ADA doesn't require employers to provide the best accommodation, just one that's effective.
Okay.
And since Van De Zande already had a laptop and could perform many of her duties with it, they didn't see full-time remote work as, like, essential.
Okay.
They also highlighted, you know, teamwork and in-person interaction, which were much harder to achieve remotely back in 1997.
Wait, hold on. 1997, that's practically the Stone Age when we're talking about, like, remote work technology.
Right.
Did the court really think that that argument was going to hold water in the future?
It's so interesting you say that because they actually addressed that in the decision.
Oh, wow.
There's a really fascinating footnote where they acknowledge that their view on remote work could evolve as technology changes.
Wow, they really did have a crystal ball. It's crazy.
Yeah, and that footnote has become so important, especially in recent years.
Yeah, I can see why.
Yeah.
So courts today are probably, like, way more sympathetic to those work-from-home requests, particularly post-pandemic.
For sure.
Okay, what about the sink situation, though?
Yeah.
How did the court justify that?
Yeah. So cost-effectiveness played a big role in their decision.
Clear.
While lowering the sink would have been a relatively inexpensive accommodation.
Right.
They pointed out that the employer had already provided alternatives,
okay,
like a lower countertop in the break room,
right,
and a wheelchair accessible bathroom sink.
Gotcha.
So basically they're saying, look, if a functional alternative exists, the employer doesn't have to go above and beyond.
So reasonable doesn't mean ideal in the eyes of the law.
Exactly.
Did Van De Zande raise any other arguments in this case?
Yeah, she did. She claimed that these denials, you know, the sink and the remote work thing, were part of a broader pattern of insensitivity from her employer.
Interesting.
But the court actually dismissed that argument. Oh. They said the ADA focuses on specific failures to accommodate, not general workplace vibes.
So even if an employee feels like their employer is being difficult, they really need to focus on demonstrating, like, concrete failures to accommodate.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's really important.
That's a valuable takeaway for anyone who is advising employees on ADA issues, I would say.
Absolutely. Van De Zande really highlights how important documentation is and how you really need to build a strong case around specific instances where the employer fell short.
I'm already seeing how this one case has, like, shaped so much of how we approach the ADA today.
Mm.
So what other key takeaways should we be thinking about as we move into discussing the modern implications of Van de Zande?
I think it's really important to remember the court's emphasis on effective accommodations and cost effectiveness.
Yeah.
Those are really important.
Right.
But we also have to consider how those principles are applied in a world that looks very different from 1997.
Especially with the whole explosion of remote work. I'm really eager to dive into that.
Yeah.
But first, let's take a quick moment to hear a word from our sponsors.
And welcome back to our deep dive into Van de Zande v. Wisconsin.
So, as we were talking about before the break,
yes,
this case set some pretty important precedents.
Right.
But it also kind of raises questions about how these principles hold up in today's world.
For sure.
And I'm particularly interested in how that famous footnote about technology and remote work has played out.
Yeah.
It's almost like the court had a crystal ball or something.
It really is remarkable how prescient that footnote was.
Yeah.
You know, back in 1997, remote work was still pretty niche.
Right.
But the court really seemed to anticipate that technology could blur those lines, you know, between the traditional workplace and home.
And they were so right, because today, remote work is just commonplace.
Yeah.
Especially after the pandemic forced so many companies to embrace it.
Exactly. And that's had a huge impact on how courts view these remote work accommodations under the ADA.
Right.
Employers can't just wave away a request and say, oh, remote work is unreasonable.
Right.
They actually have to demonstrate, often with evidence from their own pandemic era practices, that in-person presence is truly essential for the job.
That makes a lot of sense. So Van de Zande is like this foundational case
that
keeps evolving as the workplace changes around it.
Yeah.
It's kind of fascinating how legal precedent works that way.
It's such a great example of how the law really adapts to these societal shifts, but it also creates challenges.
Right.
Because we still have to kind of grapple with those core principles from Van de Zande.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of effective accommodations and the employers need to balance accommodation with cost effectiveness.
Okay, so let's kind of take that then and apply it to like a modern scenario.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's say an employee requests a standing desk to address like chronic back pain.
Yeah.
But their employer, wanting to save money, offers them like a really high-end ergonomic chair instead.
Yeah.
Is that considered reasonable under Van de Zande?
It's a classic dilemma. And the answer, as is often the case with the ADA, is it depends.
Okay.
Under Van de Zande, the court would likely ask, does the ergonomic chair effectively address the employee's need to alleviate pain while they're working?
But like effective is subjective though, right? What if the employee's just like, no, this chair doesn't fully solve the problem for me?
Yeah, that's where things get really nuanced.
Go ahead.
The employee would really need to articulate why the chair isn't effective for them.
Okay.
Perhaps with documentation from their doctor or a medical professional, they'd have to kind of build a case that the standing desk is truly necessary for them to perform their job functions without pain.
It sounds like strong documentation is really crucial for both sides.
Totally.
So employees need to be prepared to back up their requests. And employers need to kind of document their efforts to find a solution that works.
Absolutely. Documentation is key to demonstrating good faith on both sides.
Okay.
Employers really need to show that they engaged in like a really thorough interactive process.
Yeah.
They explored various options and made a genuine effort to find something that works for everyone.
So this all circles back to what you were saying earlier about how reasonable doesn't actually mean ideal.
Yeah.
It's about finding that balance point where the employee's needs are met, but the employer isn't unduly burdened.
Exactly. And that balance point can definitely shift depending on the circumstances.
Right.
You know, what might have been considered an undue hardship for an employer in 1997 might be perfectly reasonable in today's world.
Right. Especially with remote work and all this technology.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because Van de Zande, with that, you know, footnote about the potential impact of technology, really foreshadowed this entire shift. So it's really a testament to the adaptability of the law and its ability to accommodate change while still upholding core principles.
So I think our listeners are starting to see how these seemingly technical legal details can actually have a huge impact on real people's lives.
Yeah.
So as we kind of wrap up our deep dive into Van de Zande, what final insights do you want to leave them with?
All right. So we've covered a lot of ground in our deep dive into Van de Zande v. Wisconsin.
We have.
And it's amazing how one case from nearly 30 years ago can still be so relevant.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay. So let's bring it all home for our listeners out there.
Okay.
What are the key takeaways from Manizande that they can apply to their own work, whether they're advising clients or making decisions as employers or even navigating their own rights as employees?
I think the biggest takeaway is that Manizande v. Wisconsin isn't just about the specific facts of the case.
Right.
It's about understanding kind of that ongoing tension between employee needs and employer practicality when we're talking about disability accommodations.
Yeah. You know, the ADA's definition of reasonable accommodation is intentionally flexible.
Right.
It doesn't offer a rigid set of rules. It calls for a case-by-case assessment.
So it's all about finding that balance point. Protecting the rights of employees with disabilities while also acknowledging the legitimate needs of employers.
Exactly. And Vendée-Zande reminds us that this balancing act is a dynamic process constantly being shaped by things like, you know, technological advancements, evolving workplace norms, and of course, legal interpretations.
Right.
What might have been considered an unreasonable burden for an employer back in 1997 could be perfectly reasonable today.
Like remote work. I mean, that's a perfect example.
Yeah, exactly.
Of how technology has reshaped our whole understanding of what's possible and what's reasonable in the workplace.
You nailed it. And you know what's really interesting is that Vendée-Zande, with that footnote about the potential impact of technology, really foreshadowed this whole shift.
Yeah.
It's a testament to how adaptable the law can be.
Right.
You know, its ability to accommodate change while still upholding those core principles.
This has been an incredibly insightful deep dive.
It has.
I think we've explored the historical context of Vendée-Zande. We've dissected the court's reasoning, and we've analyzed its lasting implications in today's world.
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
So I hope our listeners now have a deeper understanding of this landmark case and how it continues to shape the whole landscape of disability rights in the workplace.
Me too. I hope so.
And on that note, I think we'll wrap up this deep dive.
That's good.
Thank you to everyone out there for joining us. And until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep pushing for a more inclusive and equitable world.